Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. It's Tuesday. It's 7 o'clock, and you know what that means during football season. It is time for our Odyssey NFL Insider, Ross Tucker, Insider Calls. Brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, it's great to talk to you. I will lead in with a text from our text page here that says, please tell Ross we thought his broadcast was really good, and I personally appreciate him coming to talk to us every week. Good job this Sunday, Ross. You did a nice job on the Texans-Titans game.
Oh, well, thank you, Sean. I really appreciate that. It's nice to finally hear you say that because you posted that your wife loves me.
Yeah.
And I saw Seth post that I've become one of his best commentators.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the first time I've heard anything from you,
mm-hmm.
Sean.
Yeah.
And I was starting to wonder, like, wow, Sean, like, hates me. My wife likes him, but I don't like the guy.
And you and I spent like 3 hours together when you came to Houston a month ago. So it makes me wonder, like, were you sitting there the whole time? You and I are drinking beers. Like, when is he going to say something nice about me as we're sitting here?
Yeah, when is he going to say I'm the greatest color commentator of all time? Okay.
You know what, Ross?
I'm literally trying to make fun of Titans fans that don't know how to put a poncho on. And I'm trying to get that on TV. Like, what, like, how do I not get love for that? I will say, I really do appreciate the kind words from you guys and the listeners. It means more than you know. I put a lot of time into it. I really like doing it. It's not the easiest thing to kind of move up the ranks as a journeyman O-lineman. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, man. I just love doing it. I just have fun doing it. It's a blast. I think people can tell when I'm doing that. I saw a lot of the comments from Seth's post, and it seemed like a lot of the feedback was positive. So I'm not saying, and honestly, here's the thing. Yes, Seth and I are friends, and yes, I come on with you guys, but if Seth thought I sucked, he wouldn't put that line. Like, he still has some measure of credibility.
Right, And I didn't tag you on it either. I didn't use your Twitter handle or anything. I didn't want to make it look like and I disclosed that I'm biased, obviously. But I think that you, like anybody in a job, I think you've really grown, into a person that can totally balance your personality, but also with the analytical side of it. And that's hard to find. You know, you're not over the top goofy. You're not over the top analytical. And I think a lot of people, really appreciate it. So it's fun to, you've got that element of like, oh, I'd like to watch a game with this guy.
Yep.
And there he is.
You know, what's interesting is, I usually I'm on the sixth crew, right? So I'm not getting quote unquote the marquee game or whatever, typically, but even like in a game like that wasn't really competitive, I don't know, it's just cool that people appreciate it, because it, you know, it's like the less competitive the game is, the more you start to talk about the future and players. And, you know, we talked about the Texans in the playoffs, and we talked about the Titans with the draft choice, as opposed to, like, you know, there's 3 minutes left, and the Texans are up by double digits. Like, what's the right guard? You know, like, and like, because I could do that every play, and I love doing that. But I think you're right. There is a balance there.
Yeah, and that's what Week 18 is for. You know, like, you know, that's the game. A lot of the games are like that. It's about the ramifications moving forward outside of the game. Okay, so that's a good transition into talking about the actual Texans here, Ross. You on the broadcast, I think if you're a Texan fan who's looking for optimism, you were the perfect guy to have on there, because I think you were pointing out the upside of this team in the postseason. So let's talk about that for people who didn't hear it. What do you think, not just the Chargers game, well, we can talk about the Chargers game in a minute, but just overall for the Texans, like, what do you think they're capable of this postseason?
Well, I think if they play the way they played, and I know it was only one series for C.J. Stroud and the offense, but I do think if they play the way they played in that first quarter in particular, really both sides of the ball, I think they can win a couple games. I really do. I mean, let's start with the defense, okay? On defense, you guys are absolutely elite at the two most important positions, right? So you're one of two teams that has double-digit edge guys, that has two edge guys with double-digit sacks. And then Kamari Lassiter, everybody knows about Stingley, but Kamari Lassiter and Stingley, they're like 1-2 in completion percentage or passer rating or whatever in coverage. So you guys are elite on the defensive side of the ball at arguably the two most important positions. Probably not as good at D-tackle as you would need to be to maybe make an extended run. But that's where it starts for me. And then offensively, you know, when C.J. Stroud plays like that, and when they're running it effectively enough and they can do the play-action pass like that first series, that's the upside, right? Like, they are certainly good enough to beat the Chargers. And then I think I'd be curious to see what a rematch with the Chiefs would like if they're playing like that.
Yeah, Ross, that's the one thing we took from that opening drive. I think that maybe you can hang your hat on in terms of, all right, can the offense look differently in the postseason? What I thought was, and Sean as well, is that, man, whatever was leading to CJ making so many of these errant throws this year that just didn't seem like the ball placement specialist CJ Stroud, he looked fluid, he looked decisive, and that maybe if it has been the him being banged up or whatever injuries he's fighting through, he looked more like the best version of himself for that series.
It was unbelievable, guys, because it was almost like the game went exactly as the Texans would have scripted it. You know what I mean? Like, it was, because I said this later in the game, what if it hadn't gone that way? You know, what if the Texans have a 3-and-out on their first offensive series? But, you know, so what do they do after that? What do they do if then they have another 3-and-out? Or what, you know, even if they just settle for a field goal on that first drive, what does D'Amico do after that? I mean, there's a lot of different ways that thing could have gone. And so for it to go like the 10 out of 10 perfect way, I think was just ideal to get those guys off the field, but to have them feeling good about themselves, momentum, going to this game on Saturday. Yeah, I think it's going to be a good game. I think it could go either way. And it's funny because I have a buddy that I'm close with here in Pennsylvania that he really does not like the Chiefs. He played in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He's not a big Chiefs fan, primarily because he played for the Patriots and he wants everybody to think Tom Brady's the greatest. And he's optimistic about the Texans or the Chargers being able to knock off the Chiefs in the divisional round after all that rust, you know, after being off for 24 days, which is what the Chiefs will be. So a lot of interesting possible scenarios out there. But I do think everything went perfectly for the Texans. I thought the offensive line did some good things. And it's funny, Seth, I didn't know this. I was looking at some of your tweets. I didn't realize that Damian Pierce hadn't run like that in the preseason. Like, the only Dameon Pierce I remember is, like, rookie year Dameon, like, killing people Dameon Pierce. Like, rookie year, the only thing we would, like, every week, Sean would be like, all right, Roster, we got Dameon Pierce. He's pretty good. Other than that, the Texans stink. Like, that was our, that's what we talked about on a weekly basis 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's...
Go ahead, Sean.
No. I was going to say, it was really good to see with Dameon Pierce.
Yeah, I think the thing with Dameon Pierce in the preseason also was that he was playing behind a ramshackle offensive line, and it was kind of hard to really figure it out. And honestly, Ross, we've seen the same thing with Joe Mixon during the season. As good as Joe Mixon has been, there are times where it feels like maybe he's pressing a little too hard for the big play instead of just getting the 4 yards and then whatever happens becomes a bonus afterwards. But I've made excuses for him because he's also been hitting the backfield more than any other running back with his number of carries. So, like with Dameon, it's been hard to figure out, all right, how much of it is him not really latching onto the scheme versus, all right, he's trying to learn the scheme, but he also doesn't have a very good picture in front of him.
Yeah, well, he had a better picture in front of him. I didn't know he had wheels like that. I think he got up to 21 miles an hour.
Yeah.
We know he's a banger. I am surprised watching that on Sunday that he didn't get more touches earlier in the year with the goal of trying to keep Mixon as fresh as possible. I mean, Mixon's no spring chicken, and I actually thought before the year they would trade Dameon Pierce because people still remember what he did as a rookie. That didn't happen. They kept him, so I thought, okay, maybe they'll give him more carries, but he had more yards Sunday than he had the whole season.
Yeah, well, they actually traded. They had Cam Akers on the team, Ross, in the preseason. They actually traded him in season in Minnesota, and you've seen some of the things he's done for the Vikings. So you're right. It's been an interesting season in the backfield for the Texans this year. No doubt about that. Hey, Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. So, Ross, we dug into the Texans and the Chargers. Of the other wild card round games, which one intrigues you the most?
Yeah, I mean, probably the Packers and the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and not just because I'll be broadcasting it. I'm on the sideline on Saturday night for Steelers Ravens, which is like an hour and 15 minutes from my house in Baltimore. And then I'm in the booth Sunday afternoon for Packers Eagles, which is an hour and a half from my house. So this could That's not awesome. Have worked out better. When people ask what teams I root for, I root for the teams closest to my house to have playoff games.
Geography. You root for geography.
I root for geography so that Westwood One will schedule me to do these games. But, no, I think it's the Packers-Eagles. You know, the Packers have got to be, like, the best seventh seed I've ever seen. I mean, they're top 10 in the league, offense, defense. They have I think the Eagles have the fifth best odds to win the Super Bowl. But the Packers are seventh. So, like, it's not like your typical 2-7 matchup when you're talking about the teams with the fifth and the seventh best odds to win the Super Bowl. Mm. That said, the Packers have not played as well these last two games. They're not exactly finishing strong. That also said, you know, we all saw them go into Dallas and murder the Cowboys last year and then go ahead and I think if you go back to that divisional round against the Niners, there's like five or six plays that if they went the other way, if the Packers just made that play, the Packers would have beaten the 49ers. It would have been Packers-Lions in the NFC Championship game. So I think that's probably the juiciest of the matchups. I don't know. Maybe that's my bias. What do you guys think?
No, I'm kind of excited for the Vikings and the Rams, just to see how the Vikings react coming off of that big game on Sunday night, if there's any sort of letdown, and you get the O'Connell versus McVay angle as well. That's kind of the one I've got circled.
Yeah, and then, Ross, before we let you go, the one I just wanted to get your opinion on the Chargers themselves, because they've been kind of an up-and-down team, like a lot of things you would expect with a new coach, where they've shown some really, really nice moments offensively, but they've also had some lulls. Like, what do we really know about the Chargers at this point?
Yeah, so I just did their game against the Patriots 2 weeks ago, and the game before that against the Broncos on radio. Patriots was TV. you know, I feel like Herbert is very much in a rhythm right now. He really looks to Ladd McConkey a lot. So the coverage from the Texans, in particular, the nickel, maybe it's Miles Brandt, you know, whoever it ends up being, that's going to be the key because that's the guy that Herbert looks for. He's looking for the rookie, Ladd McConkey, who is very, very good. They definitely want to run the ball. They certainly run it better with J.K. Dobbins. I think it's interesting that Slater didn't play on Sunday at left tackle. So they moved Alt, the rookie, from right tackle to left tackle, put Pipkins at right. That would not be good going against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson if that were the case. And Derek Barnett, I guess, for that matter, if that were the case. So the health of the O-line is something to watch. Herbert's been running it more, mm-hmm. which he's very capable of doing, which is a big thing. Defensively, I don't think they're as good as their statistics indicate. You know, I think they're like they might be number one in like points allowed per game. They're okay. They're not that. They're not like a dominant defense. They play more zone in normal down and distance than any other team. So think about that. So normal down and distance. Not talking third down. It's going to be a lot of zone coverage where CJ is going to have to fit the ball into some tight windows. And then defensively, the biggest thing I would say is you cannot let Ladd McConkey beat you. They have to have a good plan for the rookie slot receiver.
Well, you mentioned Lassiter. I'm guessing Lassiter will be up for that because they were teammates at Georgia. That'd be a fun matchup if the two of them are going against each other.
Well, that would be if, you know, McConkey primarily operates out of the slot. So that would be if they put Kamari in the slot against him.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different options there and possibilities, which I think are really interesting. Now, this Quentin Johnston just had the game of his life against the Raiders, but he's susceptible to a bunch of drops. McConkey, and I would say maybe even Herbert with his legs, are the key to me.
Mm. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. And Ross, I just want to be very clear. I think you were amazing on Sunday doing this game. I just want to tell you that right now.
It's not just
Amy
Pendergast.
Oh, thank you, Sean. Yeah. Finally. Appreciate it. And tell Amy I said hello and thank you.
I will. She knows. She's listening right now, so she heard you just now. We appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
We got to get
Sounds great. See you guys.
All right. See you, Ross.
We're going to get Ross Tucker a Go Die t-shirt. I'll be rolling those out in the next couple of days.
Yes.
So Ross wearing a Go Die t-shirt underneath his suit at some game that could be big for the brand.
Huge for the brand.
I got to get a little QR code on the t-shirt there somewhere.
Yes.
Be exposed to the best in the world sports show.
Indeed. My wife texted me and tweeted how hilarious it was when Ross requested a montage of people trying to put ponchos on at the game.
Plus, you know, the one bag over the guy's head that they kept showing, I was trying to figure out what kind of a bag it was. It was much taller than your normal shopping bag,
mm-hmm.
like taller or narrower. It almost like specifically made for that occasion or something, or like one of those huge liquor bottles or something.
I'm looking for a bag, a grocery bag? No, specifically a bag I can put over my head. To show how embarrassed I am at my local football team? Yes.
I need to stand out on a broadcast.
Yeah.
Your strategy of telling somebody that their wife really likes them,
mm-hmm.
it can blow up in your face because it does feel like, yeah, my wife likes you, but I'm conspicuously silent about whether or not I like you.
It just did blow up in my face like 10 minutes ago. Apparently,
I used to do that with
carrying that around with him.
With some female broadcasters, I used to... It, which is true because Brandy watches sports alongside me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would always feel like, all right, like I want to be sure. I want to give this person a compliment, but I don't want them to think that it. I want them to be sure it's a genuine compliment and not some creepy dude that's trying to whatever. But then I realized, well, that's disingenuous, you know? So I don't want to, but I'm also paranoid. Like, I don't want it to look like I work for Fox Sports or something, allegedly.
Right. Fox Sports has everybody on edge right now. Yeah.
But I always, whenever complimenting a female colleague, I always kind of run it through a filter first of like, wait a second, is there anything about this that could come off creepy? I want to be sure they accept it as a genuine professional.
Got to do that these days, man. You don't want to wind up in a lawsuit just because you you were paying a compliment.
Well, and just for the sake of, you know, good communication. You want to, whether lawsuit or not, you just, I'd like, if I'm giving somebody a compliment, I'd like them to be able to receive it as a compliment.
That's fair.
Know?
Yeah, that and lawsuits, I would say. But it was true. Like, I, you know, my wife really does like Ross Tucker.
Well, I think what Ross has is that same thing that a lot of people like Tony Romo for. And that's one of the things that Brandy and I argue about is Tony Romo as a broadcaster. She loves Tony Romo because she feels it feels like you're at a party. Like, yeah. It's like you're having fun watching a football game.
He enjoys his job.
I get upset about all the things he's wrong about all the time.
But
Brandy doesn't care. That's why she's with me. About people being wrong about stuff all the time.
And there's more Brandys out there than there are Seths when it comes to watching the late window Sunday CBS football game.
Yeah.
You know, there's more people out there that are just into the fun vibe of a game than worrying about the X's and O's of the whole
thing. Which is why I enjoy Ross, because it feels like you're having fun, but it also, unlike with Romo, it feels like Ross has actually done some homework before the game.
I think he does more homework than anybody that does that job. I don't know that, obviously. Like, we're not looking over everybody's shoulder, but if I blindly had to say who puts in the most work out of these color commentators at knowing the league, I would choose Ross Tucker and be comfortable that I would win this argument.
Moore is a tricky one, because, like, Charles Davis prepares the hell out of it, and, I really like, I actually like Archuleta. I don't think is doing games this year for the TV broadcast, or at least I haven't seen him. And then Trent Green too.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, I said, I know there's others out there. Like, I'm cognizant of that. I'm just saying, we know Ross is the one we know the best.
Yeah.
And his work ethic is second to none. He's really, really getting a lot of love on the text page too. I agree with that sentiment. Great job, Ross. Never laughed as hard as I have from a broadcast as I did on Sunday. And then the next text, typical homerism. Now y'all will act shocked when they lose to the Chargers. It's impossible. The game is a
typical
coin flip
homerism
game.
As we had a guy from Philadelphia come on to talk about the Chargers Texans matchup. Got it, buddy.
Yeah.
Go die.
Yeah.
What the hell? Like, oh, typical homerism. What the hell? What on God's green earth are you talking about?
Yeah.
I defy you to go ahead and find a quote from the first 1 hour and 22 minutes of this show where it sounded like we were like over the top confident that the Texans are going to go win this football game.
Yep,
turn on your listening ears, you bastard. I hate you. My wife hates you. Ross Tucker probably hates you. My God.
Go die,
listen,
everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ocho says, Seth, if you don't watch Landman, then you need to reevaluate your priorities in life. Don't oversell it, Ocho. Don't oversell. I don't want to oversell it, because you know what happens? It does look really good. Amy's totally into it. Landman, for those who don't know, it's a Billy Bob Thornton series on, I don't know if it's on Netflix or if it's on whatever one. Oh, Paramount Plus. It's on whatever Yellowstone is on, because it's a Taylor Sheridan joint. But it's really good. But I don't want to oversell it to you in case you do end up watching it.
I don't like Tyler Sheridan's stuff anymore. Yellowstone ruined it for me. Ever
I hate
since
him
it
so
became
much.
C-SPAN Montana, I'm like, all right, I can't do this. And there's too many of the characters like in Yellowstone. Like Beth, I was just like, no, this is just there's zero part. Like, I want Beth to die as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Why are they not killing Beth? I hate her.
Yep.
Yeah.
Browns fired their O-line coach. Would he be worth looking at? I don't know if he'd be worth looking at, but I sat behind his dad at the Browns Steelers game that Amy and I went to a couple weeks ago. And he was a delightful human being. I really enjoyed talking to his dad. So if he's
typical homerism,
if he's as good an O-line coach as his dad is a human being, then let's bring the guy in. I liked him a lot. Last name is
Dickerson. I really need somebody to explain to me how bringing in Ross Tucker, national broadcaster who covers the Eagles more than any other team, was evidence of homerism.
I don't know.
Really, really. And Ross does not shy away from insulting the Texans when he has a chance to. So.
Yeah. No, Ross was going based off of what he saw, man. He saw good things.
I don't think that guy understands, because I think I know who that is that texted in. He uses the homer thing in a lot of ways, which I feel like it's a pretty simple concept to understand homerism.
Yeah.
I don't think he understands the concept of homerism.
No, I
really genuinely think so. Maybe I'll back off a little bit, because he might have some challenges that above and beyond. I mean, he knows how to type, obviously. Or at least the text,
and he uses punctuation, which is progress these days on the text page.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Here was, Ross was talking about Ladd McConkey. He's the second one to bring up Ladd McConkey as a huge key in this game. The first one was D'Amico Ryans yesterday.
With Herbert, and he's a good quarterback all around. When it comes to, for me, it starts with him throwing the football and just the weapons that he has. The one that sticks out to me is McConkey. All right, the guy from Georgia, man, he's an elite route runner. Very shifty, moves all over the place. And you can tell they have that instant connection between, you know, McConkey and Herbert. And it's a real connection. He's all over the field, making plays for him, catching a lot of footballs. And he's a dynamic player. I think he has a very bright future in this league.
And I think with McConkey, early in the season, he was heavily in the slot a lot more. And over the second half of the season, it's been a bit more balanced, which is, again, good job by Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, and Jim Harbaugh, and kind of bringing a rookie along slowly. So now he's in the slot a little bit more than he is outside, but they'll move him all over the field. I think that is a good matchup for the Texans in terms of, all right, one of the strengths of the Texans team is their starting cornerbacks, but if you want to shadow him, if you want to shadow McConkey, then maybe Kamari Lassiter being down in the slot isn't that big a deal, because he's done that before. I think he's good in that regard. It gives you some options defensively.
Yeah,
you're the greatest threat of the Chargers. I think the Texans match up pretty well against.
Well, in the ability to move Kamari Lassiter into the slot may be somewhat tied to Jeff Okuda's concussion protocol situation.
Yeah.
You know, you bump Kamari Lassiter into the slot, and now you're out over your skis on that other outside corner. You feel great about Stingley, obviously, but then you're looking at that other outside corner, and you're looking at, is it D'Angelo Ross? You know, if it's not Okuda, and not that Okuda makes you feel like, okay, we got that locked down over there, but he's at least a guy, and especially against, maybe if he gets lined up against Quentin Johnston, he's at least got the dimensions to go against him. He's a longer guy.
And Quentin Johnston does as good a job covering himself by dropping footballs.
Yes.
You know, so you don't have to be perfect versus Quentin Johnston.
Great point. Yep, great point.
That's an unfortunate one where it's played out exactly like his scouting report. I mean, that was the big – there were all kinds of low-light reels of him dropping passes in college.
I liked him a lot coming out of TCU. I wanted the Texans to get him, and I wanted the Texans to get Ladd McConkey last year, too. I really liked McConkey coming out of Georgia.
Who was the receiver that CJ liked so much in the draft?
That was Ricky Pearsall, who went
to the – Oh, that's
right. Yeah, that was Ricky Pearsall, went to the Niners with the 31st pick. So Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Yesterday was Black Monday. How about our guy James Palmer, who now works for Underdog? He works for Underdog Fantasy. He had this to say before Gerard Mayo got fired in New England on Sunday after the game. Take a listen to what James Palmer says about Mike Vrabel's candidacy for some of these jobs.
The availability of former Titans head coach Mike Vrabel dramatically complicates this season's head coaching hiring cycle. Vrabel is a rare commodity that will not become available again. And because of that, there are some teams that people believe are contemplating their head coaching position and maybe wouldn't be if Vrabel wasn't available. Now, this past season, Vrabel was a consultant for the Cleveland Browns. And if you speak to anybody in Cleveland, and I have, they will tell you there's really nothing Vrabel can't do. Now, the teams that already have an opening, I'm told, have done extensive work on Vrabel, and there's other landing spots that Vrabel actually has very specific and unique ties to. Now, Vrabel has made it very clear what he wants in the future, which is a clear vision that is in conjunction with the ownership group, as well as collaboration with the general manager and a quarterback spot that he believes is a situation he can win football games with.
I mean, now you look at what's happened in New England, and it's, if you just want to fill in the blanks where James is just using generic nouns instead of the names of teams, you know, and names of owners and names of GMs.
Yeah.
I mean, he's described, if Vrabel ends up with the Patriots job, which he's the favorite to, yesterday an email came out, he's like a plus 180 favorite, about a 2-1 favorite to be the Patriots' next head coach. James just laid out like the first 8 steps of the 15-step process to get Vrabel in the building over there.
Yeah, and I think that you can almost, by listening to that, rule out the Jets, for instance.
Yeah.
That he's got, especially once a guy has been a head coach and they've seen just how much the front office politics can affect your job and everything else that goes along with it. He might want to, you know, dance with the devil he knows, which is Bob Kraft.
Yep.
As opposed to whatever the hell Woody Johnson is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I, and I guess the question would be, what's Elliot Wolf as the GM there? You know, like, is he long for the, like, he didn't get fired like Gerard Mayo did. But, you know, Mike Vrabel, if they're firing Gerard Mayo specifically to bring in Mike Vrabel, then Vrabel's going to have a whole lot of say over what the whole tapestry looks like.
Well, and look, and Vrabel knew about whatever the battles or disagreements were between Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien, for instance. Mm-hmm. And it just, it's one of those things that you've got to be really savvy about in choosing a head coaching job, because, man, that front office, the ownership dynamic especially, there's some teams where the owners get in the coach's way every step along the way. I think the biggest thing Bob Kraft does as an owner that probably turns, you know, at least with Belichick was a strength, was that he's kind of stingy, you know? Like, as rich as he is, he's kind of stingy. And you got to operate under certain guidelines. But I think sometimes that's, as opposed to, say, the Yankees, who'll spend, sometimes having those parameters of, like, all right, we're not going to be overly aggressive financially here, that can be a good thing, because it gives you almost like a monk-like attitude about how you win football games.
Yep.
Yesterday, D'Amico had talked about, you know, how it, you know, and a lot of coaches will echo this sentiment. They don't like this time of the year when people are almost kind of like hyenas waiting around for people to die so they can devour their corpses. As we in the media here start looking over Black Monday, it was in sharp contrast with an email that you and I got from a guy that does gambling odds. This is what he said at the top of it. Black Monday was kind of lame this year. Maybe it's because three coaches were fired in season, or maybe because owners are tired of paying multiple coaches at one time. Whatever the reason is, we've only had two firings since the regular season.
It is. It's funny.
That was a hyena moment right there.
It is almost looked at like a fantasy league. You know, like things are awfully slow in the point scoring system. Here is the cut that you were referring to with D'Amico. Because it was the very last question of his press conference yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans talking about what Black Monday is like inside of some of these buildings.
And for me, man, I just look at every day as a blessing, and I attack it that way. Like, I'm grateful for the opportunity I have to serve here with the Texans. I'm grateful for the people that I get to work with. I think that's what makes it even better, is just the people, right? The players, the staff, the support staff, ownership, just everybody being on the same page, right? It helps, like, us move in a direction where we want to go, right? And that's continue to progress, continue to move our organization forward, and that's everybody being on the same page. So I'm happy to work with the people I work with, and they understand our business, understand how tough it is to be successful each and every year in this league. So I never take it for granted, right? And I'm thankful for our guys and their attitude, and for them, the way they work. Anything I ask those guys to do, they're about it. So that's what makes it easy for me. And, man, it's a blessing to be a head coach of an NFL football team. And I never lose sight of that, never lose a sight of how hard it is to be successful. It's unfortunate when you see guys lose their jobs. And also, I think unfortunate part about it is also you just see, it's almost like everybody's waiting to see what happens. Like, that's kind of a little upsetting to me. Like,
Jimmy Shapiro,
kind of hanging around waiting to see something bad that happens to someone else. But had to think about the families that are involved, not only the head coach, but the other coaches who are on staff, kids who are in school. It's bigger than just, oh, this coach got fired and that's the news cycle and let's keep it moving. Like, I think about the families who are affected by those moves, and it's deeper than just the head coach moving on and you get someone else.
It's all true, except this is the thing, D'Amico. You will fire about, like, what, 40 people this year.
Players you're talking about.
Players. Yeah. I don't hear the outpouring of emotion, et cetera, over the coach. The coaches very much band together and are like, listen, you weren't born into a cast. You choose this life, all right? And this is part of what comes with the deal. Yeah, and NFL head coaches fire half their roster every single year. Yeah. So as a former player, we got cut once. Wait, twice in my career.
Yeah.
Now, the difference is that coaches are usually at a later life stage. Their kids are, like,
in junior high, high school.
Kids are, the time when it really sucks. And not to mention they've been moved around a bunch. But I don't, every time I hear a coach say that, I understand where the sentiment comes from.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like remorse or regret over the way I feel about it, which is like, man, everybody gets fired at some point in this business. That's the deal. And it's the life you chose. You're not forced into this.
Yeah, well, it's the life you chose. And I'm sympathetic to it as well. My kids, they had to move around. Because, you know, they had to move around because I change jobs or, you know, you get promoted or you get fired or whatever the case may be. What D'Amico just described happens in every walk of life. You know, like it's so I'm sympathetic to that overall to anybody that you got to move kids and it's junior high. And it's probably harder these days to make new friends than it was back when everybody was way less catty than they are right now. This is when I hear that cut, Seth, this goes back to something that I was thinking about and talked about on this show. In the middle of the season, when things were getting really bad with the offensive line, that middle part of the season, Packers, Colts, Jets games there, that's where you go, okay, you can start to see where D'Amico's going to have to make some tough decisions this offseason if it keeps going like this. And by and large, it's kept going like this. It's gotten a little better, but I don't think it's gotten better to the point where there shouldn't be change. And again, the question comes back, is D'Amico a wartime head coach? Is he a wartime consigliere? Can he make can he fire his friends?
That's
a cut right there. That minute 45 that we heard right there is audio that makes me feel less likely that he's able to do that, and I want him to prove me wrong if I feel like that should happen. You know what I mean?
You painted it out perfectly, because when coaches fire players, it's generally like they're not firing their friends. They're not firing guys that they've formed really close, you know, spend 18 hours a day in the building relationships with. They know their families. That is tough, but the general, you know, when I try to console people after something bad has happened in their life, I'm generally of the attitude of like, oh, I'm sorry, is it cancer? Oh, wait, did somebody get killed in a car accident? They didn't? All right, get over it. You'll be fine.
Yeah, some come up, man.
You got a college degree and a guaranteed contract. Get over it. Yep. Go work somewhere else.
That's it. See, Seth, in that case, is more, if I can use the Godfather analogy again, I said wartime, you're the Godfather. You're grabbing him by his lapels and saying, you can act like a man.
I just, no, honestly, like, when I won the Ed Block Courage Award, it was embarrassing to me because I had a really bad stretch of injuries. And there were times where people would say, like, wow, I can't believe you're keeping a positive attitude during this. I'm like, I'm not dying. Why would I? Like, if I'm not
dying. You don't have a choice. Like, you don't have a choice.
I'm not
either,
bankrupt or anything. Like, it's an orthopedic injury.
Right.
That's at the heightened emotion after Tank's awful, awful orthopedic injury, it bothered me a little bit because there's a matter of perspective there where you're like, yeah, but you know what? He's not dying.
No.
Like, all right, move on with it. You've got a job to do. It's just, it sucks, but he's not dying.
Yep.
And like, and as long as you're not dying or you don't have some kind of long-term illness or something, things ain't bad. Yep. So just move the hell on.
We alluded to Jerry Jones' acting chops. We'll let you guys hear the audio of it in the next segment. Does Jerry Jones deserve an Emmy Award for this performance in the show Landman? And we'll do our petty cast. We got some good petties for the top of the hour.
This morning. Yeah. I'm hyped up.
I can tell, man. I can tell. You're on one this morning.
Petty AF.
Yes, let's do it. So we'll do the petty cast at the top of the hour. Get your petties ready to text in. 713-572-4610.